You're listening to Sunday Extra on RN. I'm Hugh Remington. Jesus, so the Bible tells us, had little time for the rich. Three of the four writers of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, record his famous warning that it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. So why does the left half of politics seem to have such a difficult relationship with Christianity? Labour frontbencher Chris Bowen warned after the recent federal election defeat that, quote, people of faith no longer feel that progressive politics cares about them. In the United States, where the openly Christian vote is far more powerful, it is a big issue for the Democrats. The evangelical vote is a huge part of Donald Trump's support base. But Pastor Doug Padgett is trying to do something about that. He's a self-described evangelical preacher. He campaigned for Barack Obama, and through his organization Vote Common Good, he's determined to turn out at least part of the Christian vote on behalf of whoever has chosen to go up against Donald Trump in next year's election. Pastor Doug Padgett, welcome to RN.
Well, thank you. It's a real honor to talk with you today.
Now, has the Democratic Party always had a problem with Christian voters?
You know, they haven't. Say 40 years ago in the United States, the religious vote, both evangelicals and Catholics and Protestants, they were split across parties fairly evenly. In fact, if you can imagine that in 1976, there was an evangelical president who was a Democrat from the southern state of Georgia. And now some four decades later, that has shifted, where to think that a Democrat would be a Southerner of religious commitment just seems nearly impossible. But it hasn't always been that way, that would be impossible. I don't think it will be that way always in the future. It's one of those cultural swings that's been taking place, not only in the United States, but as you mentioned, in Australia and actually in places all around the world, that progressive politics and progressive ideas have had a harder time in the last four or five decades connecting with religiously motivated voters.
So that president in 1976 was, of course, Jimmy Carter. But of course, the first Catholic president was a Democrat in JFK. So yes. you perceive this as being perhaps a temporary blip rather than a permanent condition.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a temporary set of conditions. Now, if it isn't addressed, it could become a permanent condition. And that's something that a lot of us are worried about for a lot of reasons. And I want to be clear that, you know, while I support the Democratic candidates and I'm personally on the progressive side of all the politics questions in the United States, we at Vote Common Good are not arguing that the Democrats should become a religious party. What we want is for religious voters to know that Democratic candidates take them seriously and that they want to ask for their vote and they want to listen to their ideas and they want religious voters to be included in the Democratic Party. And it might sound strange to some people to think that you could feel unwelcomed in the progressive expression of politics in the United States, but that's just how it feels to an awful lot of not only evangelical voters, but also Catholic voters and people from mainline church traditions.
Well, do Democratic candidates, the ones currently before us in the race for the presidency, do they take Christians seriously? Because it has been noted in the most recent debate, there was no mention from any of them about God, other than a brief sort of God bless this candidate or God bless that. But there's no substantial notion of trying to tie together Christian ideals to the Democratic political message.
Yeah, and that's one of the most curious and befuddling issues to many of us. When you look at the candidates that you mentioned that were in that last debate, many of those are people whose own personal lives are fulfilled by their faith. They're faithful people themselves. They actually root their whole care for one another and how they're going to live in the world inside of their faith tradition as well as their American political tradition. But what they don't tend to do is talk about it very well or talk about it very openly. And on the Republican side, you very often have candidates who have no political or have no religious interest at all, like Donald Trump, and who demonstrates his life in no way, shape, or form to comport with any kind of a religious tradition at all, and has been very proud of that, who speaks regularly to people of faith and says, your issues matter to me. It's sort of become a bit of a norm in the Democratic system to just not talk about that as a candidate. You can talk about it in your own biography, which is how people would know that Hillary Clinton is a Methodist or that Elizabeth Warren also happens to be a Methodist. With Hillary Clinton, I was very disappointed that Hillary Clinton did not speak more about the action and the role of that her faith has on how she thinks about her public service and how it would impact her as a candidate. But look, it's a tricky thing in the United States political culture, and I know in other countries as well, because we're not asked to elect people. In fact, we're specifically asked as a society to not have a religious test for our political leaders. So someone has to be quite adept at this, where a candidate like Barack Obama actually did pretty well at talking about his faith. And there's a lot of, there was a sense, I've heard this from a number of people, where it felt like Barack Obama got a bit of a pass on it because the black church in America can speak about politics and faith in a more integrated way.
So you're basically saying that Donald Trump's connection and his support from religious evangelical Christians comes from Christians who see through his personal history and his habits to something that chimes with them about the values that he seems to espouse that go deeper than his own personal practices.
Yeah, it's one of the glaring lessons that you learn from Donald Trump, that Donald Trump is that classic example of a politician being able to say, even though I'm not like you, I do like you. And that goes a long way with voters. Voters can sniff it out when someone doesn't like them. And if they get the feeling that a Democratic candidate doesn't like them, it kind of doesn't matter if the candidate is even more similar to them in their own faith tradition.
Now, a conservative Christian commentator has accused you of being more interested in teaching secular Democrats how to tailor a message to Christians than in actually turning Democrats into Christians. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a concern that we need to be careful about, right? I can see why someone would say that, well, all we're trying to do is get them to pull the wool over the eyes of these voters. I can see why someone would be concerned with that, noticing that Donald Trump has done precisely that with these voters, right? He has sort of taken their vote and then acted in ways that are so contrary to their best interest or the best interest of humanity as a whole. So I can see why someone would have that concern. We are not at all trying to ask candidates to bluff the voters. We're asking candidates to be straightforward and direct and honest with them. And if their own faith is something they can speak about in ways that are meaningful, we ask them to. And if not, and we do this with a lot of candidates, not only for president, but across the federal system, we say to them, feel free to tell a voter, I'm not a religious person. I'm not motivated by a religious faith, but I know that you are. And because you are, I want to know more about how you're motivated for the things that you care about in the world.
How much of the issues of the push for safe legal abortion, for same-sex marriage, issues that have mattered deeply to the progressive side of politics, created this gulf with more conservative Christians or traditional Christians?
Yeah, there's a lot of Christians for whom issues of what happens in pregnancy and with abortion and whether that's legal and accessible in our country and left up to a choice of a mother or if that's legally forbidden by the law. Those have been motivators for Christians for 100 years in the United States. It's been a difficult question for politicians and for religious people to engage in. And in the last 40 years, the United States has not talked about this very well. We've not talked about the issues of abortion. People have ended up on one side or the other and have tended to stay there. And while many of the candidates that I'm supportive of and that we know the Vote Common Good is going to be supporting believe that that's a moral choice that should be left up to the mother, that there's still an argument to be made about the morality of the question, you know, that the different people are going to make. We want to make sure that abortion is kept legal and safe and available to people. But that's not talked about very often on either side of the political spectrum, frankly. Somehow it's become a no-talk rule that carries a lot of power for the religious right.
Do you believe that whoever emerges as a Democratic Party candidate, if they don't engage with that mass Christian population, self-identifying Christian population, that that alone might engineer their defeat to Donald Trump next year?
Yeah, I worry about that. I worry that that's true. I do feel that there's such a negative response to the Trump administration right now that there's many groups that could be rallied to defeat this administration. I hope that that's true. So I'm nervous about suggesting that some religious group is the power broker in our society, because, you know, even if there's 17 or 25% of the population that are evangelicals or Catholics or whatever, that's still not the majority. So, no, I think you could still win without the religious vote. I just don't know why you would, and why you would try to do so when religious voters are available and are wanting to consider Democratic candidates, especially at this time, why you would turn your back on those voters, not only for this particular election, but just ongoing. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So I'm quite hopeful. And I think it's just bad for the political party to cede the notion of God to the Republicans. That doesn't make any sense. I don't know why someone would do that, and they certainly don't no need to. So, but I do get nervous that if the religious community, white Catholics and white evangelicals, continue to support Republicans at the level that they have in the last 5 or 6 years, that it's going to continue to elect people who pass policies that are just harmful to the planet and harmful to the human thriving.
Well, the favorite question, Pastor Doug Padgett, what would Jesus do?
I know. Isn't that really is a great question. One of the things that we say to voters in our campaigning is we say, hey, if you're unsure what the common good is and you don't know who to vote for, read the Sermon on the Mount on Monday and vote on Tuesday. Our elections tend to be on Tuesdays. So we say maybe that's a good indicator. And if you can reconcile your vote with your reading of the Sermon on the Mount, if you're concerned about what Jesus would do, that might give you an indication about what Jesus would do.
I mean, there's enough in the Bible about his concern for the poor, his comments about the rich. Some people have said that although socialism didn't exist as a doctrine back in those days, that his ideas align more closely with the socialist conception of common humanity than a sort of a loser take nothing sort of capitalism. Would you go so far as to say that Jesus was a socialist and that was in his essential nature?
Yeah, I think you framed that in a really, really great way, that as much as you can compare a first century idea about money and politics and power, it's really hard to take from Jesus that there would be some kind of a Republican libertarian capitalism as the primary economic system that humanity should thrive for. Having said that, we do live in a capitalistic society in which the distribution of money is something we all have to ask ourselves about. And so for any thoughtful Christian, I think we're not only compelled by the teachings of Jesus to care for ourselves, to love our enemies, to love our neighbors, and to love those different from us with the same love that we have for God. We're actually called to put that love into specific action in our society, dealing with the issues that we have to face. And so no self-professing Christian in the United States or anywhere else gets to simply outsource their political identity to the first century. So we're called to something more deep in our faith, to think about how we would want to live as a follower of the teachings of Jesus in our day than simply to try to replicate whatever Jesus would have done in Jesus's day. So it's a complicated question. I would personally be on the side, yes, of redistribution and of fairness and of inclusion without payments. I think that not only is in line with Jesus's teaching, I actually think it would give us a better society now as well. So.
And as we do know over the last 2,000 years, that everyone can read almost anything into the Bible and take anything out of the Bible. Pastor Doug Padgett, so good to talk to you today.
It's really my pleasure. Thank you so much.